Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Knoll Sports Podcast. My name is Jack Williams here with us in Kasum, and today we're going to be talking about just what we do kind of every week, to everything going on in Florida State Athletics, ranging from, the quote-unquote off-season football to, softball and baseball, officially in full swing now of the season, basketball nearing the end of their regular season. It's just hitting about upon everything going on right now in the FSU world and here in Tallahassee right now. The biggest news today, it being Thursday, February 22nd today, is all the teams in basically all of FBS Division I have been announced as for the EA Sports college football game coming out later this year. A lot of exciting news about players being involved in the game, teams being involved in the game. It looks like just about everybody in the college football world is going to be involved in the game. Looks like it's going to be a good time. Essen's a little bit more into video games than I am. My complexity of what video games have been is I had a Wii system growing up. That was all I had, and I have a Switch now, and I don't really use it too much. So I think it's cool in general, but there's some people that, a lot of people play video games a little bit more, and this is a huge impact for, sports fans just in general. So I think Essen could, touch on it a little bit more in depth than I can. So Essen, how do you feel about, this college football game coming out and all these teams being announced?
No, it's exciting. The last game we got was NCAA 14. That was about, 11 years ago. So
oh
14 would have been the 13th season, I guess, or whatever it works. Mm-hmm. Before Jameis Winston and Florida State won the championship. So it would have been the 13th season because they won in 13.
Mm-hmm.
So that means Jameis Winston never got to, like as they did with the previous Heisman Trophy, get player usually was usually on the cover.
Athlete, yeah.
So Jameis Winston never got to be on the cover. So it'd be kind of cool if they did, because what Madden does now is like has two different covers, one is a regular and then you could get the GOAT edition or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of cool if they did all the Heisman winners since 2014, which would feature Jameis Winston and some other players obviously, and then have a GOAT version, where I think the obvious one would be the GOAT of coaches who retired because you can't play with them in the game. So I think kind of cool to have it that way. Obviously Madden has been stale for a few years. It sounds like they're going to copy some things from Madden, use some of the same stuff, and then do like the franchise, not franchise, but dynasty mode, where you could go with a, what Jack's probably going to do when he gets a game, go with Ball State and try to win a national championship or two, or, put together a dynasty.
Listen, I think I can't remember where I said it, but I think I said to Essen or our other friends, Liam and Douglas, I said, listen, I will teach myself to play the game. Because, again, I just am not good at video games. But listen, if I can teach myself how to play the game well and create a mode where I can get Ball State and just play Indiana for all 12 games and use that as therapy, because I've watched Indiana beat Ball State way too many times in my life, I will be more than satisfied. Again, I know talking about Florida State in the world and all the football that does that, they're like, Ball State and Indiana, but like, trust me, it's like big brother, little brother over there. It's like, it's trauma. But anyway, yeah, I mean, it's cool. It looks exciting. It's cool to see that I love college football and college sports, so to see that it's cool to really need to see that this is getting a platform again.
No, definitely. And so I had a story up earlier today when we got some of the news. FSU opted in. They sent a tweet at 10:24 a.m. They're opted in the game. So I think all 134 FBS schools, including a newly FBS Kennesaw State,
Wow, really?
So should be exciting. Kennesaw State mentioned in our podcast, so good for them. They've made it.
Got a Kennesaw State mention in there.
Yeah, so according to Athletic, each player received $600, as well as a copy of the game, which was $70 value. If they opt into the game, if the player opts out, they'll be represented with a generic player avatar, a la Barry Bonds in MLB video games.
Mm-hmm.
Can't remember his name, but it was kind of hilarious that you can never play as Barry Bonds. But Air Force, Army, and Navy players are not to accept NIL deals and payments, but are expected to be in the game, so good for them. Chris Fowler is one of the announcers. I saw Kirk Herbstreit. So it's going to be an overall fun game. It's going to be exciting to play, you know, Florida State, obviously, will have a very good team. I think the 12th team playoff, and their logos will be in the game as well.
Mm-hmm.
So just overall exciting. You could create your own player and make it do the thing. So it's just fun. I think at the end of the Athletic article, Jaden Daniels, the Kansas quarterback, was quoted about saying, like, he's played, you know, NCAA growing up, and now he actually gets to play as himself, which I think is, like, you know, more valuable than a $600, just a priceless memory of you being able to play the game as yourself, mm-hmm. and not to create yourself is going to be really interesting for players.
Uh-huh.
Especially with players like now, like they were obviously never in the games, and it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be fun. I think it kind of be cool to see if they could do some like with teams, like if they could do retro players without having to pay them, because like, you know, they kind of be interesting if they could do that. Like,
yeah,
if you could go back and play as a Tim Tebow, if you go back and play as a Jameis Winston, if you go back and play as a I do not know any Ball State players. I guess they had two in the Super Bowl. So.
Willie Snead.
There you go. You go back and play as Willie Snead. So they did have more players than, you know, Ball State had two, FSU had one. I think Jack would be happy to point that out.
Yeah, they did. We had more than West Virginia. FIU had nine. Okay, so chirp, chirp. We're not a football school. We're not really an anything school, but whatever.
It's a state school.
It is a state school. Ball is not a state, but life is. Anyway.
So excited about the game. I think, obviously, even like as Jack mentioned, someone who's not into video games, I think he'll probably cop that and play it. But it should be fun.
There
we go. Yeah, should be fun. You know, it's gonna be fun because it's gonna be interesting to see. Someone mentioned, you know, when it comes out, it's gonna be interesting to see how Twitter handles the traffic because everyone's gonna be so excited playing it. Everyone's gonna be tweeting about it. Everyone's gonna be putting videos out.
Right.
Everyone's gonna have photos up of, like, you know, it's gonna be a fun time to you know. So we'll see how many people put in PTO during the summer at that time. I'm out because I'm playing the game this week. I'm
playing it all week, yeah.
I think they're going to unveil more in May, and then the game's we've seen dates in July. It's supposed to come out sometime, which is perfect because in August, obviously, you have all the camps and everything going.
Get people hyped up for the season.
Exactly, I know. But yeah, so we're closing in on that, which means football season is far, but not too far. We're getting closer to it.
Right around
the corner. Today is, what, February 22nd?
Yeah.
So in less than a month, FSU is going to be opening spring practices on February 19th. March 19th. If it, in a month,
I was like, do we miss something? Yeah.
If we're back in February in a month, check on me.
Oh, no. Something went horribly wrong everywhere if we're back in all February in a month, truly.
But yeah, no. So FSU starts spring practice, and I think that's right after FSU spring break.
Yeah, I think that's usually how it trends. That's how it did last year, I believe.
So FSU spring break starts March 9th, ends March 17th.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is interesting because last year Florida State did have their spring practices. They had like two practices before spring, went to spring break, came back. I think at times Norvell was not happy with the, I don't want to say effort, but just like
the pace.
Just how like, we have a lot of newcomers. It's going to be interesting. Like you see like a drop off before spring break and after spring break. So I think it just makes sense to start March 19th.
Mm-hmm.
They'll have, I think it was 16 total practices, March 19th, March 21st, 26th, 20th, the March 28th will be a scrimmage. And then obviously April 20th is a spring showcase. Believe we haven't got a schedule, but we should be able to be at all the practices, you know, have player availability after, which means a lot of players either that, you know, decide to come back to Florida State, we're going to get to talk to again. A lot of players who transferred to Florida State, outside of newcomer stuff, we'll get to talk again to.
Mm-hmm.
Should be fun. You know, it's going to be interesting to see just... It's football. Football's almost back. We're in the middle. We're in the thick of basketball season, FSU women's. We're going to talk about that later. You know, poised for NCAA run. Men's basketball is men's basketball. That's all I'll say for now.
Yeah.
Softball is off to a good start. You know, they had a rough weekend, but we'll get into that as well. And then baseball, obviously, is off to this 3-0 start and have a big series this weekend. But no matter how much everything else is going on, football is the moneymaker for anyone on this beat.
Uh-huh.
Football is king, like, in the South, in Florida. That's what we're going to go back to. So it's going to be exciting to be able to get that coverage again and get that going, because
yeah, that's where all the attention's at. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, no matter what, like, you know, and I think one thing would be kind of fun to ask players once spring practice begins, like, how excited would be able to play as yourself in NCAA?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think that's going to be a question that's going to be commonly asked. And I think it's going to be fun because, obviously, we're going to be excited to play as fans and people that work around the game. But think how exciting the players are going to be like, yes, let's go. We can play as ourselves.
Just a kid to be like, yeah. I mean, again, I always try to reiterate this as well because they are in college and they are, by law, they're adults, but they are still kids in school and stuff like that. So just being, you know, a kid in college and being able to play as yourself in a video game is that has to be so cool. I mean, so yeah, they'll probably, you know, get those questions, and it will be very neat to see what their reactions are in playing as themselves. And probably these FSU players are probably, you know, beating up on Florida and Miami and Clemson every week. In their design games.
Oh yeah, they're gonna get their 63-3 revenge on Georgia too. As well. So they're gonna have a lot of fun with
stack it all up. Yeah, absolutely.
They can have a lot of fun with it. We'll have fun with it. So yeah. Moving on, I think Jack, I think we could do something fun. Who are five players you're excited to watch in practices? You know, once we get there, I'll let you start. How do we want to do this? Do you want to? We can do a draft.
We'll
do five players each. We'll start. We don't have a coin, so flip it. Oh, it's heads, you win.
Okay.
So, first overall pick, who are you taking? Who are you excited to watch?
I mean, I think this is obvious for everyone. I think DJU is, everyone is kind of looking forward to as well. After Jordan Travis and, you know, the unfortunate injury he had and, you know, not the ending that he wanted to have to his college career, you know, there's kind of a gap left in who is the next quarterback that was going to step up into that place. There's still some development that needs to be done with guys like Brock Glenn and Luke Cromahawk, who could be another guy that's exciting to watch in these spring practices as well. But DJU, in my opinion, just how he's going to fit into the system. You know, this is a guy that had a really good year at Oregon, has seen Florida State before when he played at Clemson. And I'm really excited to see how he's going to fit into all of this and where, you know, it's really hard not to be in this mindset, but just being comparative and where Jordan Travis was versus where he's going to be. Again, it's hard to like avoid that mindset because you always don't want to go into it like that, but at the same time you think about like these are two really high skilled quarterbacks, and it's going to be interesting to see where he's going to be at practice, how he works with the unit, and you know, maybe give us some flashes as to where the offense may be from the quarterback's position and wherever he can control going into this year versus where it was last year. He's a player I'm really excited to watch coming into practices. I think the most excited to watching to come into practices. We're going back and forth. Essen, is he up there, number one, or do you have someone else in there right now?
No, I think you're right. Him being number one pick, I think that's obvious. It's an easy one. And I'm excited to watch, you know, just like you mentioned, he's talking to Jordan Travis about this. He's embraced the expectations of, like, you know, when you come to Florida State, he mentioned that our newcomer availability with him as well, Jameis Winston. He mentioned some of the other quarterbacks. So when you come to Florida State and you're the quarterback, you know who's come before you. And I know Jordan Travis is the immediate, you know, predecessor when there was, like, you know, been some time between Jameis Winston and Travis. But you know the expectations you come to Florida State. It's a big deal being the quarterback here, so it's been interesting to see how he looks in practice, what he does. I'm going to go number two. I'm going to stay the same position. You mentioned someone, but I'm going to go with actually Brock Glenn.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Because I do think that, you know, DJU was brought in to be the starter here. And he's going to have every opportunity, but I don't think that we should shut the door and say that Brock Glenn is not going to have a chance.
Right.
I think Florida State, they love Brock Glenn. He's going to be a redshirt freshman. They love him. They want to see what he can do. You know, obviously, he got thrown to the fire in two very, very tough games last year at the end of the year.
Oh, yeah.
You know, starting the ACC Championship, and Tate Rodemaker was out. He went 8 of 21 for 55 yards. Important thing is he didn't turn the ball over. Against Georgia, he went 9 of 26 for 139 yards after Tate Rodemaker opted out of the bowl game late. So it's thrown to a situation with really tough defenses. Against two teams who were, you know, Louisville was 14 at the time. Georgia, I think, was six. You know, obviously 5-6 matchup. So some two really, really good players. So it's gonna be interesting to see. Obviously, he did not throw a touchdown pass. Had two interceptions. He finishes redshirt and his freshman season 19 of 51 passing for 229 yards, average 4.5 yards a pass. So not great, but I think something people forget about is how much time he was robbed with this dumb injury.
Yeah, he was out for a bit, yeah.
Because I think otherwise he would have got some more playing time and got in some other blowouts. So he played four games official last year. I mean, four, I don't know. The Louisville game, I don't know if that counts. I know the Georgia game did not count, obviously, because that was his fifth game.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, I'm excited to see what he can do. If he can take the next step and push DJU, I think it'll be interesting. I think we could talk about Luke Kromanok later, but I think he's gonna be exciting to watch, but I don't think he's gonna be the backup. I think it's gonna be Brock Lynn.
Yeah, and
I think Luke Kromanok will have a chance to compete for that, but I think you're going with if your freshman is your backup, then you have some questions about Brock Lynn's future at Florida State, which is a whole other conversation to be had. But yeah, no, I think it's gonna be interesting to see how Brock Lynn enters. Florida State has the world of confidence in him. Even after last year was not what he planned, what Mike Norvell planned. So
no, and like you said, he handled being thrown into the fire as well as you could be handled being thrown into the fire like that. Absolutely.
So I was going to ask him. We didn't set the rules for this before. Are we doing snake where I get 2 and 3, then you get 4, or
I whatever you want to do.
All right, let's just do snake. So we get back to back players.
Okay.
So number three, I'll do. I'm excited to watch Hakeem Williams.
Okay.
You know, he finished last year. Another player who showed off his potential last year. He finished with 5 receptions for 80 yards and a touchdown. He had 1 reception for 9 yards in the Georgia game. His breakout game was against Syracuse when he had a touchdown, went 44 yards, broke some tackles, and made some good plays. He obviously got hurt after the Duke game, and we didn't see him until for nearly 2 months. He played against Duke on October 21st. Then his next game was December 30th against Georgia. Uh-huh. Obviously, some of that is because there was some time baked up in between off between Louisville, which was December 2nd, and then the Orange Bowl. But Hakeem Williams showed off some potential. He has a, good size at 6'2", 208 pounds. Was a 5-star recruit for a reason coming out of high school, out of Stranahan High School in Fort Lauderdale, I believe that's right. So, ton of potential. I'm excited to see if he can take the next step. But he's one of my favorites to take over one of the outside roles to replace Johnny Wilson, Keon Coleman. Obviously, we might talk about Malik Benson later. We're just doing this draft on the fly, to be honest, guys.
Yeah, honestly, we didn't plan anything here.
We didn't plan this, so it's kind of just a fun little thing. But Hakeem Williams is an extremely talented receiver. I'm excited to see if he can take that next step and be a dominant force. And become the next number one receiver for Florida State.
Absolutely.
Back to you, Jack. You get 2 picks now.
Yeah. I'm going to mix it up a little bit here more. I think like the rankings I have so far, I think I'm just going off a play because I'm excited to see. I'm going to put Jalen Lucas on here, the transfer from Indiana. And just what I've seen of the clip so far, just his punt returning that he did with IU in the Big Ten was just very impressive so far. FSU hasn't really had... You could argue that Keon Coleman had, some elite punt returns last year, but really wasn't a guy that really was able to hit the ground running and get there. He was more of a guy that made a lot of moves, that was able to get through traffic. But I feel like Jalen Lucas could be really a player on punt return that could be very elite, very fast, very exciting. We saw that in a few clips that he had back at Indiana. And then stepping into the running back position as well, too. I mean... Trey Benson leaving is going to leave a really big gap there. Obviously, Lawrence Toffoli is back there as well. A few other guys, too, but I feel like Jalen Lucas is a good addition for this running back room. And I'll be very excited to see where he fits in. So far, I still think Lawrence Toffoli holds kind of a veteranship role in that room and holds kind of a starting role there as well. But I'm interested to see where he kind of lines up with all of that. And then kind of going to a returner, I guess, the next guy I'm excited to see. And just seeing the next step he can take, considering just the year he had last year was so dominant, is Patrick Payton. At defensive end, obviously another loss coming over there with Jared Verse, but that punch they had at both ends of the line was just so lethal last year. And Patrick Payton really took a step up last year and just, had that that step from being good to being elite last year. And it's going to be – I'm very, very excited to see what this year is going to be for him now. And just seeing everything that he did last year. He was all over people. You know, he really encapsulated just what you want from a guy at defensive end. You know, I do not know what happened in the offseason and being able to get him to, you know, come back after he did – you know, talk about his intentions to enter the portal, but he did come back here. And it's going to be exciting to see what he's going to do here in the spring season and practices. He's a great you don't really hear this too much, but he is a great guy to watch during practice too. This is a guy who has a ton of energy constantly. He's always wanting to do reps at 100%. I think we heard one time in availability talking about how during practices sometimes his teammates will mess up drills. And he will go to the coach and be like, why is this being done this way? And the coaches will be like, well, your teammates aren't really doing it correctly. So Peyton Patrick will get on top of his teammates about doing the drills correctly. And he is someone who just does everything at like 110%. His intensity is up there as well, too. He's a fun player. He makes practices fun. Practices can get a little mundane and boring occasionally. But he's a guy that is always keeping things hyped up. There's a drill that they do between the defensive line and the offensive line as well throughout practices. It's probably the most entertaining drill to watch during practices. And Patrick Peyton is always the guy that is, really pushing the offensive line's patience and stuff like that, is really driving in there, and he's just a fun guy to watch at practice as well. And if I was on the offensive line, I'd be a little nervous to see just what step this guy's making as well, because he was dominant last year, and it's going to be exciting to see the steps he takes this coming season.
And I think an important note about Patrick Peyton would be he's someone who played safety at Miami Senior through his sophomore season, started his career there, moved to defensive end in his junior season, so I believe he's still scratching the surface of how great he can be at the position. Mm-hmm. You know, was a dominant force last year for a lot of times. There's some points when he struggled when it looked like, you should be doing more when Jared Verse is double-teamed and getting all this, all these looks at him. He was getting chipped by the running back. But as the season went on, Patrick Peyton found his groove and was really, really good. Finished, I think, tied for second with DJ Lundy in sacks. Jared Verse led the team.
Right, yeah.
So, I agree with Jack. That's a great pick. I'm going to go someone who's probably, right next to him or close to him on that line, Daryl Jackson. We didn't see him much last year, the stupid suspension, but from the NCAA, or not suspension, I'm sorry, that's the wrong word, but the stupid, waiver thing, where now I think next year, a second time waiver is allowed to play, second time transfer. It just a mind-boggling thing, because the kid moved home for his family. Obviously he did some things in the background that didn't make sense, that were not smart on his part, but Daryl Jackson, is a menace. I think Jack can agree. He looks scary in practice. He looks imposing. Florida State has a lot of big players, but Daryl Jackson looks imposing at practice.
He's a big, big guy.
So it's going to be interesting to see how, listed at 6'5", 334 pounds on their roster this year from Gaston County. Should be a fun player. I'm excited to watch him play. I think if, between him, obviously, losing Braden Fisk, Fabian Lovett, and Jared Verse from that defensive line is going to be tough. But when you have Patrick Peyton, Daryl Jackson, who am I thinking of? Joshua Farmer, and a couple of transfers they brought in, you have a ton of potential still there. So I think it's going to be fun. I'm excited to see how Daryl Jackson plays. He played one game last year against Georgia and then wasn't able to do anything else. So we'll see how he looks. Number seven, I'm going to go Roydell Williams.
Okay.
The running back from Alabama. Transfer, I'm just excited about his game. He's someone who has more carries than anyone else on Florida State in his career, in a single season, I should say. Lawrence Toffoli obviously is a great player returning, but he's more of a receiver guy because Isaiah Holmes is coming back. But Roydell Williams will be a redshirt senior. He was listed at 5'10", was the backup to Jace McClellan last year. Finished with 111 rushes for 560 yards and 5 touchdowns. Just kind of more of a workhorse back. He has 234 carries for 1165 and 11 touchdowns in his career. Can also be a decent pass catcher, 21 catches for 152 yards and 2 touchdowns. And he's also returned some kicks, kickoff returns for 51 yards. Mm-hmm. Former 5-star player, 4-star player out of high school, 112th overall player by 247 Sports. Mm-hmm. Ton of potential. He's someone that I think can take that running back room. I think he's been someone the teammates have mentioned has been just a constant pro coming out during the season. I'll be smiling. You know, it's a cliche thing to say I'll be smiling.
Always has a smile on his face.
But he's someone that, like, you know, has obviously we're only doing they're only doing what's the word I'm looking for, Jack? Just a training right now.
Practices?
Not practices, but the...
tour of duty?
Tour of duty right now. But, I think that's what quote I was looking for. Natural born leader.
Oh, okay.
That's what I was looking for. Former Alabama players have raved about him at newcomer availability. Mike Norvell, at his seminal booster stop in Orlando earlier this year, called him incredible. He said he had an incredible hard worker. And he called him a natural-born leader, paraphrasing right there. So I think he's someone that's kind of already stepped up, and you love when a player could step up as a leader. He's not been here on campus long, probably since January. So I'm excited to see Roydell Williams. I think he's a ton of potential. I think he could be number one back this year, where he could be someone like, you know, you hand the ball off to in the fourth quarter trying to milk away a game, which something I think we talked about last year, Jack, is they kind of struggled. Trey Benson was a really good runner. But against the quality opponents, they struggled on the ball. I think Roydell Williams could be more of that north-south runner who could just go between the tackles and get you 3 to 4 yards. You don't have to get a first down each time, but just milk the clock and shorten games when Florida State needs to end the game.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so Jack, you're back up for two more, then I'll close out with my last one.
Oh, my gosh. Who am I excited to look towards during practice? I'll just say someone I've heard about a lot about during recruiting. Again, I don't know how much he's going to get played, but again, someone I'm excited to see a little bit more of as well. We haven't heard a lot about recruiting. We weren't able to watch too much of him. Whether I think I was able to watch a little bit of him in 7-on-7 camp. Landon Thomas, a tight end, well built, 6'4", 245 pounds. One of the top tight end prospects in the country, was the top tight end prospect in the country, according to this bio I'm looking at right now on FSU's website. I got to watch him a little bit, the summer before his senior year at 7-on-7 camp. He was at elite camp too, but there were 90 billion kids there, so it was really hard to know who was who there. This is a kid that, put up some elite stats at a really good high school program at Colquitt County up in Georgia. A kid that was originally going to go to Georgia, flipped. He was committed to Florida State. He flipped to Georgia, and then he flipped back to Florida State.
Because he was someone who wanted to be at Florida State, always wanted to be at Florida State, but, you know, you got to do what's best for yourself, and Florida State was not looking great when he decommitted from Florida State, so it made sense. He's someone that wanted to be a Noel, so good for him to be back here where he wants to be on a team that's going to, you know, be pretty good. And as Jack mentioned, like, you know, something I'm looking forward to is something you have to remember is Florida State did not sign another tight end out of the in the transfer portal.
Yeah.
And he was only high school when they signed. So they have a lot of belief in him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is going to be a fun player, I think, to watch and see how he gets together in practice and stuff like that. And with freshmen, you never know how much time they're going to get played, where they're going to go in and stuff like that. But it'll be interesting, excited to see him adjust at tight end and stuff like that. As I mentioned, they didn't sign another tight end out of the portal. So, he could be playing a big role as well. Tight end room is somewhere that took a few hits as well. Landon's very young, but if he shows development, we could see him be a little bit active in this room. But that's up for debate whatsoever. Kyle Morlock is, the big piece there. Who is still there right now? I can tell you who left.
Jackson West.
Marquiston Douglas left.
Jackson West is still there. I'm sorry.
Jackson West is still there. The guys that left, Marquiston Douglas is at Arizona State. Jaheim Bell declared for the NFL draft. It's a room that's a little bare, again, but at the same time, it doesn't have to be a room that needs to be extremely deep. But, I think this is a guy that if he works hard enough, we see a really good spring out of him and a really good summer after them, he could play, a somewhat active role in the room. But it's a player I'm excited to see for sure. Do I do one more player?
Yeah, one more.
One more player. I'm going to go with the bias here a little bit, and it being a local player. I'm excited to see because it's going to make my heart feel good. I'm excited to see Mekhi Dansey. I covered him. I moved here in 2021, and I've covered him and watched him rise throughout high school. He was the first year when I came here in 2021. He was turning into an active piece at running back. You know, he was a guy that was putting up good yardage, and but he wasn't the number one guy eating up those yards yet. His junior year is when he really exploded onto the scene, and you know, was him and Ryder Popple, who is now at the Citadel. Ryder Popple was one of the more bigger guys at running back. Mekhi was just a speed demon, and then after that season, it just turned into him being one of the fastest runners, if not the fastest runner, in some events in Florida and track. He actually placed on the world competitions as well, and was ranked on the world charts. He's very skinny. This kid that needs to put on more muscle, in my opinion, as well. That's going to be interesting to see how he balances that, because I think he's going to be involved with the track program at Florida State. It's going to be interesting to see how that narrows out and that figures out as well. But it's going to be really exciting to see how he adjusted the football and that running back and stuff like that. Again, I think if he wants to be playing at running back, he needs to get a little more build on him. But this is a guy that has a I did not finish off that word. He has a large amount of speed. He has a ton of speed, and he's exciting to watch, as I just almost emphasized there. I'm very excited to watch Mekhi. This is a guy that could be used a lot more on special teams too, considering just the speed he holds as well. It'll be interesting to see if they decide to use him in those drills a little bit more and stuff like that. But yeah, as someone who covered Mekhi throughout my career when I was at preps, and seeing him move up to the high school, the college level, I'm really excited to see what he's going to do here, as you can tell from me almost cussing on here. Mekhi is my other pick. I think my eyes are just going to be drawn to him no matter what, just knowing who he is. He's a great kid too, so I'm excited for him.
No, I'm excited to see how his speed, like, he's someone I'm excited to see in spring practices. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think playing a big role in his freshman season.
Right, yeah, of course.
But part of spring practices is the importance of setting a stage for later down the road.
Mm.
And now I think we both agree Dansey might be a player that might do, football his freshman season, decide, I cannot put on this weight that I need to put on to play running back at the college football level.
Mm-hmm.
And decide, like, you know, I'm just going to go hang out and play, just do track full time.
Exactly.
Which could totally happen. Dansey could be someone that never sees the football field for Florida State. Which is not a negative thing. That's just how talented this kid is at track. But he's worth seeing what the potential is at running back. I think he's a fun player to watch. He's definitely someone I want to keep an eye on at practices, because he's a extreme talent and can do a lot of things. It's going to be interesting to see what he does. But once again, someone I don't see to see the field maybe at all in this freshman season. Maybe he'll get some blowouts, but I think he's a redshirt for sure, so that max he would play his four games.
Yeah, I mean, development is kind of the key thing of watching with him and stuff like that, and just seeing how he adjusts to the system and stuff like that. So it'll be interesting.
All right, so I just got to make sure I got to pronounce this last one right. I'm going to do Sion Loliaha.
I probably would pronounce it worse than you. So
yeah, so Oregon State transfer. He played in 40 games and 22 starts in 4 seasons at Oregon State. Recorded 88 tackles, including 15 for loss, 4 sacks, 13 QB hurries, 4 forced fumbles, and 1 fumble recovery. He was second team all Pac-12 performer last year, which, reminder, you know, that was one of the best conferences in football last year.
And it doesn't exist anymore.
It doesn't exist. Well, it does exist. We're not doing Oregon State and Washington State, are we sure, okay, sir?
The what?
Washington State and Oregon State erasure is not going to happen over here.
They don't play in that. They play in the Mountain West now.
No, they play in the Pac-12.
Oh, my God. Anyway.
They have a I think it's a little joint thing where they have a schedule, like, make a schedule. They still have two-team Pac-12. Tupac.
Oh, my God.
Tupac is my name for the league, you know?
And I will tell you now, Tupac's from Los Angeles, not from Pullman or Corvallis.
Corvallis.
Anyway.
But anyways, very talented player. I think of all the players we talked to at newcomer availability, he might have been the most impressive speaker. Just fun guy, fun story. Listed at 6'3", 270 pounds, at defensive line. If somebody's going to get some playing time, he's from originally from. I'm going to try saying it, Humuatukalu Vavu, Tonga.
It's in Tonga.
It's in Tonga.
Okay, or you could just say Tonga.
But I didn't say Tonga. No. But yeah, the rest of the stuff I butchered enough. So.
Okay.
I could say Tonga correctly. Very talented player. Before that, he's went to play in Hawaii for like a couple years for a coach who was trying to raise awareness of football. Because he mentioned he played grew up playing rugby, which is big over there. Mm-hmm. Moved to Hawaii away from his family, which is, you know, pretty far anyways. Then when that the coach and the program went defunct for that, he moved to California and played over there. He said his family's never watched him play. So hopefully that'd be kind of cool to see if Florida State can work on an NIL deal to get his family to come out and play over here at least a game or two. That'd be really cool, but extremely talented player. He's someone that DJU has a good relationship with as well. I guess it's kind of funny. We earmarked our list of the Oregon State transfer and Oregon State transfer.
Yeah.
Not on purpose. Like I said, we're doing this on the fly. But, man, I was impressed by this kid's ability to talk. Very good stats at Oregon State. Just someone who has a ton of potential, oozes potential. He's going to have a chance to show off his potential at FSU. And be a player that's going to be part of the depth at a very deep, deep defensive line group.
Absolutely.
It's going to be fun to see, you know, there's other transfers like me. And so I'm excited to see what this kid can do.
Mm.
You know, we call them kids like 23, 20, 22, 23. They're not kids, but, you know, they're kids for all intents and purposes.
They are, yeah.
They're still college students. So I'm excited to see what he can do. It's going to be a fun player to watch. But yeah, those are our 5-5 players. I think I kind of like the format we did because I think we've run a lot of repeats if we did like, you know.
Yeah, yeah, if we did.
The draft kind of forced us through different ways. So especially on the spot too. Like that was a different thing. So anyways, Jack, starting tonight, you're going to be covering the softball Dugout Classic, which Florida State is hosting.
Yeah, the Dugout Club Classic.
Should be fun. I think they host FIU tonight.
FIU tonight. Boo, Liam.
if you listen to this, you got booed.
He's doing that just because he went there. They host FIU tonight. First game's at 5, second game's at 7:30. They're doing kind of double headers each day. Tomorrow, Friday, 3 p.m., first pitch is against Charleston Southern at 3 p.m. The next game will be at 5:30. Predictably, depending on if they go extra innings or they
weather and all that stuff, you know.
Yeah, you never know with the softball this year. And then they wrap up on Saturday 3 p.m. with Nichols, and then again with Nichols at 5:30 p.m. It's true whatever way you want to put it. It's a substantial dip-off from the competition from what they faced last weekend. I mean, there is a way of, like, yeah, you want to respect all your opponents and stuff like that, but, like, last weekend they were playing Stanford, UCLA, and Georgia, and we'll get into what in the world happened all there in a second. But this is a good weekend, I think, just for them to learn from what had happened last weekend to kind of settle things down. The freshmen were kind of thrown into a chaotic situation early on, and I think, and again, I'll get into what Lonnie said a little bit about that, about them learning, and being into some games that might be a little bit more manageable, games that, might favor them a little bit more. At the same time, earlier this season, Charlotte came out with an ace pitcher and ended up beating Florida State in that first game of the Joanne Graff Classic earlier this season before FSU came back the next game and demolished them 11-0. But I feel like this classic is coming at the right time. I feel like this is something that this team that will be comfortable with, games that will be good for them. I think this is just a healthy dose of what the doctor ordered for Florida State. It's wedged right in between two really challenging tournaments, obviously the Clearwater Invitational last weekend, and then right after that, FSU is going on the road to Eugene, Oregon, and they will play Maryland, number 6 Washington, number 14 Oregon. This is going to be a good tournament for them. Just talk about developing, finding a pace, finding a groove, finding a gel, whatever words you want to put it. I think this is a good tournament for them. It'd be fun to be back home too.
Definitely. No, I mean, I think it's interesting. We're talking to Tim Hoffman, who is the SID for softball.
Mm-hmm.
They just have a hard time getting teams to FSU. They're doing the James Andrews Classic this year, which is normally, I think, a home tournament for them that weekend. So it's and then they're going to the Florida Gulf Classic for the FGCU Spring Break Classic in Fort Myers. So they have less tournaments at home this week. That puts them, 3 to 5 tournaments before ACC and all those stuff start
right
on the road. So it's just a interesting setup this year. where they're going to have maybe one or two less home tournaments, which is fine. I think with this team, they want to test themselves and see how good they can be, rather than just, like, you know, go through the motions and just play some teams up. And I think one thing I remember with Lonnie Almeida, the head coach, is she is a, and this is, I'm borrowing from Chris Knee, is a mad scientist. She's going to experiment. I think she mentioned to you, Jack, and at Media Availability this week, she's going to tinker and she's going to throw, you know, she threw out Mimi Gooden instead of Allison Royalty. Mm-hmm. She's like, you know what? We're down 10-0 or whatever the score is. These games matter, yes, at the beginning of the year, but they also don't matter in a sense. Like, the more important thing than wins and losses at this point of the year is development and growth for the young players.
Right.
Because if they don't get that now, when are they going to get it? Because you cannot depend on a Allison Royalty to throw 50 innings, like, because she's not Catherine Sandercock.
No,
and you couldn't depend on Catherine Sandercock for 50 innings.
No, that's she's a lot to ask for, period.
Mm. And so you got to just throw out some players in the fire. And sure, it might cost you a couple spots in the regionals. Like, you know, you might not get a super regional at home.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the season, it doesn't matter if you cannot make it to the super regional because your pitching's falling apart at the end of the year when you're playing multiple teams in, like, a crazier format, it won't matter. So mad scientist Lonnie is going to, you know, and that's once again hat tip to Chris Knee for that nickname. But she just got to she's got to figure out what she has, and good or bad, she's also, you know, I think people forget about it. Yes, Lonnie wants to win this year. Every head coach wants to win this year.
Yeah,
but you're gearing yourself for what's going to happen next year, year after as well. So you're obviously like, you know, whatever happens this year is going to be important for future development as well. So, yes, she's a head coach. She's competitive. We've talked to her. She's extremely competitive. She wants to win every game.
Absolutely, yeah.
But she has her eyes on the bigger picture at all times as well, so it's going to be important to see what happens.
Yeah, it's about preparing for what's ahead, too. You got, yeah, as you mentioned, you got to think about, you know, what's coming up as well. You can't just, you know, sit on, you know, just what's happening in the moment. You have to think about what's ahead as well. And I think it is a smart decision, as much as it might not. It might impact the final score. It is good to get those younger pitchers into those games and stuff like that. As Essa mentioned, as Lonnie said, Mimi, she could have gone to Allison Royalty in the Georgia game, but they said, or UCLA, but they decided to go with younger pitchers and get them that vital experience, because that's what playoff games are going to look like down the road, as you've mentioned.
No, I mean, look, encouraging to Florida State is what they scored, like 500 runs, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
They scored 14. They could score 20 runs across two games, and shut out Stanford 4-0 in the Clearwater tournament. I think I cautioned this last week. It could be a bad tournament for Florida State where they win 1 or 0 games.
Mm-hmm.
They end up winning one game, having lost one game to the rain. Go to all rain in Florida in the spring break, during spring.
They're gonna love this coming up.
So it you know, the Tennessee game would have been another good game to have for just innings pitch for pitchers. But it worked out. They were able to add a doubleheader against FIU. I think there's a 45% chance of rain Friday, and that's the only thing that says for rain this weekend. So hopefully not impacted by, you know, rain this weekend. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens. It's Florida. Who the hell knows?
It's truly in the summer. You can count on a rainstorm every afternoon, too. We're not there yet, but
yeah, no,
it's very possible.
But yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see how they bounce back, especially the younger players. You know, Jasoni Beauchamp continues to rip the ball. Issa Torres had a first career home run against Georgia, was it, I think, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so she had her first career home run. So the young players are still playing. You know, it's going to be interesting to see Danley's progression, because she's going to be someone, I do believe, that by the end of the season is going to be someone that you could, like, oh, here's big spot, here comes Danley.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's on both sides of the ball. So I think she's still going to figure stuff out. You know, McKenna's still figuring stuff out. She's in a bigger role this year, so it's going to be interesting what happens with McKenna Reed. I think she'll progress as the season goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a ton of talent still. It's a very good team. I think the expectations for this team are going to be a little different the rest of the season, because now people see, yeah, you know what? It's going to be a work in progress to pitching all year, but it's fine. This is going to be... You don't count out Lonnie. She's gonna.
You don't need to hit the panic button.
No,
really at all.
No, I mean, yes, the giving up 20 runs against Georgia is not fun. No one wants to see that.
I don't think anybody wants that.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, it's part of the game. That was a crazy, crazy tournament. You know,
mm-hmm.
There was more runs scored with so many games turning out. There was more runs scored in that tournament. So It happens. It's softball. Do not panic about a 5-3. They're still 5-3. There's a good chance, you know, what, 6 more games this weekend, it could be 11-3 and still be ranked very high. They could lose a game this weekend. It's not a big deal.
Mm.
What is important is the team gets better throughout the season is, I think, what we should not lose focus on.
Exactly.
But, yeah. So, anything else on softball, Jack? Any final thoughts, you know?
No, I just... I think you see a bad loss, and I think it's easy to pull the panic button, but I don't think that's the case here. It's a different team than it was last year. I don't. People need to understand that you can't be the same every year. Unfortunately, everyone cannot be like Oklahoma. But
I guess I will give a shout out to Kaylee Harding. You know, threw 28 bats, 4 home runs, 14 RBIs, 30 total bases, just on fire. Beecham, as I brought up earlier, is hitting .522. She has 1 home run, 9 RBI, 16 total bases. She's walked 4 times. I think it's kind of crazy to see this team has walked 37 times and struck out twice. Mm-hmm. No, sorry, 20 times.
But
36 walks, 20 strikeouts, yeah.
Yeah, but I think they'll be fine. Like I said, I think this weekend is going to be I think this weekend's going to be good for them. I think this is a perfect weekend for them to, like I said, just you know, maybe, I don't know if reset's the right word, but you know just maybe things will be a little bit more calmer, you know, and you know, continue to build upon what they built upon out in Clearwater.
No, definitely. I think it's gonna be fun to see. You know,
mm-hmm.
Florida State has all 4 regular. Every regular player outside of Devin Flaherty is hitting over .300. Amaya Ross has racked up 6 steals already, so she's been good at first base. Ian Field has 2 home runs, and we know her power potential is way higher than that. Johnny Kerr has 3 doubles, a home run. She's driven 12 runs. She actually is second in the team in RBIs. Issa Torres obviously mentioned the first career home run. So Florida State, I think the funny thing is, I don't think they've reached their potential in the offense, because I don't think Eden Field's hitting.
No, they're hitting extremely well in offense right now, and even then, yeah, like you said, there's a high ceiling for them on offense. Absolutely.
Yeah, and then pitching, I think we need to give our flowers to Royalty, 0.54 ERA, 3-1 record. She has, 13 innings pitched, 14 hits allowed, 1 earned run, 9 earned runs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sorry, 9. One earned run, 9 runs. I would still need to see struggle. Obviously, be you know, she just has 10 strikeouts in her 13 innings, 5 walks. So the walks are a little high still. She's allowed 3 home runs, which has been a major problem for McKenna Reed. She's allowed 9 runs in 8 innings, 4 home runs. So I think I mentioned earlier to you, 11 strikeouts, 9 walks. So something she needs to work on. Danley has 12 walks, 11 strikeouts in her 9 2/3 innings. Mimi Gooden, actually, you know, 5 strikeouts, 4 walks, 1 home run around. She has a 1.56 ERA, so she's been pretty good in her time out there.
Mm-hmm.
Emma Wilson came back down to earth a little bit, but still something that Lonnie has a ton of confidence in. It's going to be interesting to see how they throw and what happens this weekend, because like we mentioned and need to reiterate, this is a very, very talented team.
Mm-hmm.
Played Thursday, Friday, Saturday, so, you know, this week, 6 games in 3 days. Before they get almost entire week off before they go to play next week, Friday, Mount St. Mary's, was it?
Something yeah, like that. Yeah, Mount St. Mary's.
Mm-hmm. In Oregon, so be interesting to see when they travel. Obviously, Oregon's a trek out there. Someone used to live in Oregon. So it should be interesting. That's all we have for softball, baseball. Jack, you were out there for 2 games, I guess, last weekend.
I was, yes, 2 games.
2 game series.
Yeah.
What were your, you had a takeaway, sir. What were your takeaways?
Yeah,
let
me whip this up here. Well, the big thing I could think of was, just off the bat, is...
How it was not off the bat?
Where it was good. Yeah.
How they could not hit... I'm guessing you're going to start with the pitchers, right?
Yeah. The pitchers, Cam Leiter. Oh, my God.
I figured you'd go with pitchers, which I just thought was funny you said off the bat, because they could not get anything off the bat.
Yeah. No, I mean, this was his debut, and he just was lights out that first game. I mean, he's thrown one game, and after that first weekend, he's leading the nation in strikeouts. He faced 18 hitters, threw 89 pitches, and he struck out 11. That's his previous high from his last one.
Struck out 11. I mean 13.
This is from his... Anyway, he struck out 13. I mean, he was just lights out. He played fantastic in that first game. I think there was a lot of hype about him coming here to Florida State, and he really just showed out in that first game and really just gave Butler nothing to work off of right now. Five innings and really just set up the game for more. He really just set the placemat for this game for younger guys to come in just all around. And it was a game that FSU, I know the final score doesn't dictate it, but this was a game that FSU really struggled to get the bats going early on. Throughout the first half of the game, do you want to talk about is like, I think the first three runs were scored off of wild pitches, and they really struggled to get their bats going early on. And he was kind of holding, and he said this in postgame too, is that the runs would come. He just he was just about staying patient and just putting up zeros, as he said, and that's what he was doing. He was doing everything that he needed to do at on the mound. And as soon as he got off, the bats got going, and he really just set the placement for them to get a shutout. 11-0 shutout. Mike Martin's number was 11, so there's a lot of significance with that.
It was cool, first game for Florida State since Mike Martin's that happened. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was a cool little moment, and that was exciting as well. The offense, that was another thing, too, is the offense did break through late in these games. This is a different story. Whoops. Let me get to my weekend takeaways. I was on the one game. The base running. That's the other thing. The base running was perfect on the first weekend, which is really hard to come across. I mean, it's a perfect stat. Just shows the confidence of the base running, the speed of these runners, and a few of these bases were really pushed a few times as well. They attempted 11 stolen bases, and they got 11 stolen bases. It was really impressive base running. Drew Farrow and Jamie Farrier led the effort. They both stole two bases. Drew Farrow probably meant a little more to him as well. He's a Florida High alum locally, is a UCF transfer. So that was his first game. This is his first weekend at Hauser playing under the Garnet and Gold. And FSU's getting really close, and just one weekend alone, they're very close to, they're starting to creep up on their stat line from last year. They stole 31 in 54 games. Just the fact that after one weekend, they're only 20 off of that now is wild. So that FSU is just putting up these really strong stats out of the first weekend, showing this could be a very different year for the team. Another thing, too, the newcomer performances were elite as well. Cam Leiter, we talked about, too. Carson Dorsey, we saw some good stuff as well. Rowan Hudson, Matt Souser made their Sentinel debuts too. They had two transfers come in as well that were able to make their debuts on the mound too. They also talked about, Marcus Dingens on the bat, who went 3-for-3 as well. Jordan Williams got his first career home run, and then right after that, Cal Fisher got his first career home run too. We got to see some local guys get some starts as well. Jackson West, who's a Childs alum, Alabama transfer, got his first start. Drew Farrow got a start too. He started both games at Butler as well. A lot of good performances from the new guys. Some of the old guys had a few good games too. McGuire Holbrook had his first career home run off a three-run shot. James Tibbs had four RBIs all off of them from a grand slam. It was just a good weekend overall. I think it's showing early on. Again, it's extremely early on as well. I know something similar happened last season. Last season ended up kind of falling apart a bit. But this could be a very different year. This is opening up as a very good weekend. I know last year they did open up to beat TCU, and that kind of got some people thinking, well, but this is a team that's hitting very well, pitching very well. It will be interesting to see how they're getting into the groove and how they continue to develop their identity. They did kind of get into a little bit of a battle with Jacksonville on the road before they were able to pull away from that game late. So I think the hitting is something that might need to come along a little bit more, it just being in the time of it. Early in the games, looks like it's taken a little bit for it to get going, and then towards the end of it, it seems like things start to explode a little bit more. You could go along the ideology of it's not about how you start, but it's how you get there. So that's kind of the thing that's for me as well. Jamie Arnold also had a great weekend as well, too, pitching. Him and Leiter are going to be, I think the two leading arms for them as well. FSU has such a deep pitching room. So we'll see how everything goes out right now. But right now, in the moment, you know, Arnold and Leiter are two, you know, really hot hands for them. But yeah, it was a great opening weekend. I think a lot of people are looking, really starting to look forward to this team too. I can tell because it was impossible to get parking each time I was there. But yeah, they're back at home this weekend, taking on Western Carolina. SM will be at that series this weekend. I guess you talked to Link today. Yeah, what did he, you know, what did he talk about in getting into this series? You know, what did he talk about coming, you know, coming back home and then, you know, just being on in front of the home fans once again?
Yeah, no, we got Link today. He talked to us on the over Zoom. And just, you know, go back to the stolen base thing that you mentioned. He said it's not going to be an everything game thing. It's when the game presents itself. That's something against Butler they saw made sense. I think, I'm not sure if they had another steal against Jacksonville, but just something that they saw that made sense from that game. So he said something they've worked on since August 20th when, you know, practices open and stuff. So just something they saw that worked out. It's not going to be, it could be a weekend where they have one steal, they could have 13 steals, you know. So it's going to just depend on the opponent and what they can do, because obviously, if the catcher's a strong arm behind the plate, not necessarily something they could do, because you don't want to throw give an out to somebody who has a really good catcher, but they see someone struggling, could be something that gets going. So he kind of paraphrasing, that's kind of what he said today about that. For pitching, he mentioned Cam Leiter's Friday, Jamie Arnold's Wednesday, Saturday, Cam Whitaker, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was slated to start the Sunday game, Arnold the Saturday game. Obviously, Saturday game got rained out, so they threw Whitaker on Connor Whitaker on Tuesday against Jacksonville. And in that game, Link mentioned that, you know, he was someone they wanted to, they didn't want to bring him in, have him start, be an opener, then take him out and have him pitch again Sunday. It was something that didn't make sense because injury risk, it's too early in the season. So it sounds like Yoho Tejada or Ben Barrett, who has not pitched yet this year, could be two candidates to pitch on Sunday in that Sunday game. But they're going to play by the ear depending on what happens earlier in the week. So we'll see what happens. First pitch of the series is obviously at 5 p.m., 2 p.m. Saturday, and 1 p.m. Sunday. Like I mentioned, you know, the rain chances look lesser this week, so it's a great thing to see. I think had some good stats in here. FSU through Tuesday's game is hitting 370, which is 14th in college baseball. They're tied for 26th in the nation with 26 runs scored. Their 15 stolen bases is second in college baseball. Mm-hmm. They've not been caught yet. You know, I think a cool stat I pulled out was 9 of their extra 40 hits of this year have gone for extra bases. So it's going to be fun. Demas, Ross, and Cam Smith were the leadoff hitters when everyone was healthy last year, the top two hitters. They're back this year, and they both off to good starts. So Link kind of talked about, like, you know, how they're two completely different players. Mm-hmm. Ross is a slap guy who's going to get on base and try to steal as soon as he gets on. Cam Smith is a power guy who has a ton of power, immense power. So it'll be interesting to see how they grow. Talk about the starting pitching. I think the only two pitchers not available four pitchers not available this weekend are Carson Dorsey, who, you know, pitched a big game on Tuesday. Has 14 strikeouts and 2 walks through 5 2/3 innings this year. Mm-hmm. Whitaker's not available this weekend. They want to play it safe. Gavin Adams is unavailable this weekend. He's getting treatment per Jarrett. And left-handed reliever Andrew Armstrong is unavailable Friday and Saturday. He could pitch Sunday if he has a bullpen session, if that goes well today. He could be available Sunday. You know, and then Western Carolina is a team that is also that hits a ball where the Catamounts are 35th in the nation with 340 batting average. 32nd with 41 runs, and they're tied for 43rd with 7 home runs, so a bunch of power. Nate Stokum has 3 home runs already for WCU. He's driven 8 runs, walked 3 times. So Link Jared mentioned that's a very veteran lineup that has a ton of experience. They know how to hit. It's going to be a test for FSU's pitching this weekend. I think Butler was a okay hitting team. This is going to be a little better team. It's going to be a little more challenge.
Mm-hmm.
But they should be fine because it's a very talented group. I'm excited to see Cam Leiter pitch. I think you can speak on this, Jack, since you watch him pitch live, and I only watch him in practice. He brings a different fire to the mound. I think you mentioned he's a spark plug because he sets the tone not just with his pitching but with his demeanor.
The energy is out there, absolutely.
Just talk, but what was that energy like, especially on opening day? Like, you know, what was it like to watch, like, you know, when the crowd's already pumped up, but so you don't have to do much to excite them, but when he brings that energy, it's kind of like, you know.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it just sets the tone there as well, and that, like, even, like I said, even when FSU couldn't get the bats going, it still just felt like, it just still felt like it was just a 3-0 lead. And Ling talked about, too, how that game could have easily been 3-3, but just it felt like FSU, even with that, you know, slim lead, it felt like they were in control all the whole time just because the way Leiter was dictating it out there and the way he was. There's a great picture that FSU Sports Information took off of that game of Leiter celebrating off the mound and him just screaming and yelling in excitement. I mean, he just, the way he just dictates on the mound, just he just shows that when he's having a good day, he will show that he's in charge of there and takes over it just in general. So he's an exciting player to watch for sure, an exciting pitcher, and someone that I think is going to just, you know, continue to elevate this program a little bit more and really play into Link Jarrett's vision of building Florida State into Link Jarrett's program.
Oh, definitely. I think he's been fun to watch, like you mentioned. You know, once again, 5-2-1 for the games this weekend. Florida State should be a favorite in all three games. It should be fun. You know, it's still college baseball. You don't take anything for granted. Anything can happen on any given day.
College baseball is insane.
So, but Florida State should be a favorite. Should be a fun weekend. Get out to Dick Houser.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy. It should be fun. Baseball, as it always is. Moving on, we got what I'll be covering tonight while Jack's at softball is the women's basketball game. They have... Who we had tonight? Is it Clemson tonight?
For women, Boston College.
Boston College, Boston College. So, you know, this should be, and we've seen, we say this should be a game that Florida State wins handedly, but we've seen them, you know, struggle against lesser opponents this year. Florida State enters the game at 19-8, 10-5 in ACC, as Jack mentioned. You know, they've clinched their 10th consecutive winning season in ACC play. And they're in fifth place in the ACC right now. Boston College comes in 11-16 and 3-11. So it's a game that you kind of hope that Florida State can get ahead early and just stick ahead and just get ready for, I guess they had a week off, but for the rest of the season.
Mm.
You know, they have Clemson, Louisville at Louisville next week, and then Clemson to close the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
So not a ton of time left in the season, so... Could be interesting to see how Florida State comes out and attacks this game. I think it's been a... When was the last home game for Florida State? They were on the road both games last week against Miami.
For home? It might have been the Pinkock game.
Yeah, it was a Pinkock game, I think. Mm-hmm. Might have been the last time they were home. So it's been
almost 2 weeks ago, I think.
That sounds right, because I think they...
Yeah, it was almost 2 weeks ago. On Sunday, it'll be 2 weeks.
So, yeah, they're back home this week. Neither of us have seen them play in a while, so it's going to be interesting to see how they play tonight. I mean, we watched, obviously, the Miami game on the road. Oh, my God. The new at Seminoles.com website can be tough to navigate sometimes. Miami game, they won 74-68 on the road. Wake Forest beat 71-63. Oh, sorry, last home game was a Pinkout game in 98-94, double overtime. That was a fun game. That was February 11th, so yeah.
Mm-hmm.
February 11 days later, back at home against Boston College. They need to win this game. Obviously, you want to win every conference game. It would be win number 20, which would be a significant, you know, milestone anyways.
Mm-hmm.
I think the question we wanted to pose anyways, what does Florida State need to do to host, Jack?
I think you need a win.
Because you don't have a great schedule to close out. Clemson's okay.
I would say that if they didn't... What time of the year was this? They didn't slip like in mid January. If they didn't lose very poorly to Duke and they didn't lose to Virginia, I would say they would still be in the running for a hosting spot. However, what you need to do in these finals games is you need to win substantially against Boston College. Even in these games that they're favored heavily by FSU. They're up by a lot, but in the fourth quarter, I don't know if it's wanting to empty the bench or it's what, but the fourth quarter, these games that they're up a lot by, the gap substantially closes. You know, they could have won a lot at Clemson and they didn't, even at Wake Forest, like that 71-63, they were up substantially that entire game. Like, I feel like in one of these games, debatably, these two home games left, you need to win by a lot. Like, go out there and show you win a lot. And I think the biggest thing that Essen would agree with this is you need to incorporate people scoring, people scoring substantially that aren't Tanaya, that aren't KK, that aren't Sarah, and that aren't Omira. I know Omira didn't, I think it was Miami, Omira didn't score too much, but at the same time, you know, Tanaya still put up a big number, and it's fine that they're putting up big numbers. I think you want that no matter what. You want Michaela continuing to get double-doubles. You want Sarah to continue scoring a lot as well. But, you know, Bonner needs to get involved. Tucker needs to get involved. I mean, you know, Brooke mentioned that, well, they play a big role in rebounding and stuff like that and setting up plays. Well, I feel like you need to spread your scoring a little bit more, or what's going to happen is when you get to the ACC tournament or the NCAA tournament, you're going to get against a good team and they're just going to clamp down against they're going to be able to take two of your good scorers out of that situation, at least. So if you can do an NCAA game and you say, like, there's a situation where you take Tania Latson out of there or you take Michaela Timpson out of there, then Sarah Bajetti and Omira Gordon are going to be options. However, if you taking Timpson out of there kind of eliminates any sort of control that you'll have inside the paint. Coach Wyckoff talked a lot about how this team is substantially smaller compared to the teams that they face in the ACC and stuff like that, so there is a little bit more work that goes into rebounding, hence why KK Timpson does a lot of this rebounding work as well, and that there needs to be they have to fight a little bit more with rebounds, just talking about their height and stuff like that. Tania Latson is a great player shooting and just navigating through the paint, you know, but height mismatches can come into that equation as well. So I feel like in the situations that you have, just take advantage of them. And then in this Louisville game, I mean, if you want to host, again, I just got very far away from that question, but if you want to host against Louisville, you got to win. I mean, winning at number 20 Louisville, a team that is currently, well, they've slid off a little bit, they're fourth in the ACC right now, a win, I think it would move FSU above them in the ACC standings. I'll have to see who Louisville has left. But Louisville, I mean, getting a win at the KFC Yum Center, which is the goofiest sports arena name in the world next to the Smoothie King Arena.
I mean, the best.
The best, excuse me. the schedule's a little bit more easier for Louisville to win out in. They're at Georgia Tech, and then they play at Virginia comes to Louisville. They do have, in this moment, they have more games left than – no, wait. Yeah, they do. More games left than FSU. But FSU needs, one, to win out, and two, I think they need to be – they need to focus on what they're winning against. But, God, I mean, that Duke loss was really bad. That Virginia loss was worse. I mean, those two games, if – they had different out. I think even if you lost against Duke and made it close, you could still argue, but you needed a win against Virginia, period. But even then, looking at that, I mean, their ACC losses aren't, outside of those two, aren't bad. I mean, you have an overtime loss to NC State when they're the number three team in the country. You had a double overtime loss to Notre Dame, who was number 12. And then you lost to Syracuse, who is a top 25 team in the country right now. Just keep it simple. Win out and win big in the games that you need to. I mean, Essen, I think you could agree to in this situation as well. Boston College and Clemson, they can't have these fourth quarter dip offs really anymore. Like, if you're up by a lot, they need to kind of hold on to that. Do you agree that's important in, you know, accomplishing what they want to get done?
Oh, definitely. And I think one thing to remember for, you know, when it comes to the tournament, you mentioned that, you know, if they beat Louisville, they'll be in the driver's seat to finish as a four seed. I think the top four seeds get double byes into the tournament.
That sounds about right, yeah.
So that's important because I think right now Florida State is number 7 in the ESPN bracketology. In the Corvallis region, so they would be playing against Green Bay right now. And Oregon State, Northern Arizona would be the other matchup in the first two rounds. So right now, I don't think it matters what you do. I mean, you have to win out the regular season, but that's beside the point. You want to get that double bye, because if you beat Louisville, you're in the driver's seat to get a double bye and set yourself for a good tournament run, because I think you have to make a deep run to the tournament to get a top four seed. I think it's a long shot. I think you probably have to win the conference. I think that's the only way you get a top four seed at this point, because of the losses you mentioned before. So I think you got to win the conference tournament. So the best way to set yourself for that is you don't have to play every single day. You want to get a top four seed.
Mm.
So, yeah, I mean, I do not know how much you win by matters into the bracketology at this point. I think you just got to win and in. But for good measure, go ahead and beat Clemson and beat the teams he should, Georgia Tech tonight, or Boston College tonight, by a good amount, and do not leave that to chance of what you have to worry about. I think it's the best way to go about it. Obviously, talented group. Tania Latson, you know, had an article talking to three women's college basketball experts, analysis, and they all agreed, you know, Tania Latson is one of the more underrated players just getting on the national stage, and people will know who she is because that she's that good of a dynamic player. So I think Florida State can make it run anywhere they go. Just stay away from Caitlin Clark, obviously. but they have a good chance to do something. So it's going to be interesting to see how they come together. Obviously, I think they're not in the bubble, but as a 7 seed, if you lose to a Boston College or to a Clemson, I think you all of a sudden have a chance of getting in the bubble. So win out,
right,
and you're in the tournament.
Mm.
Perfect. Now you got a – and I think that probably gives you a top 4 seed in the ACC, because Louisville will – you have that head-to-head against Louisville then. Then you got to go and win the tournament.
Yeah.
And if you win the tournament, you're hosting.
Exactly.
And if you're hosting
– easier said than done.
Easier said – yeah. Oh, of course.
Absolutely, like, yeah.
But if you're hosting, you have a chance to do something in the tournament.
Right.
You get Tania Latson, KK Timpson even on the national stage, and all of a sudden people are like, oh, wow. Look at what Florida State has. Look what Brooke Wyckoff's doing down there. Mm-hmm. You get more national coverage. You get more national love. And going to next year when you have KK Timpson and Tania Latson back next year, you kind of build the program and get them like more eyes. And maybe students will show up to games.
Ooh, call them out. I mean, I agree. They're I'll call them out here. I don't know why it doesn't really make sense to me why the men's crowds are bigger than the women's crowds, considering the women's team is playing better. I think there should be a lot more crowds at the women's games. Like, come on, guys. Like, seriously, they're a lot more fun to watch. The games are really exciting. It's a fun team to watch. Tania Watson's just worth the price of admission, which is not expensive, by the way. I mean, it's a cheap ticket to go see a really good team.
Don't students get for free?
I think students get there for free. Students, everyone. I think the community does show out pretty well. But, like, I think the most packed I've seen it this year for a women's game was the first game against Tennessee, which is an extremely fun environment. But I don't know. There's a lot going on this time of year and stuff like that. And like Essen said, too, I mean, look, I'm looking at the number of the 4 seeds left in bracketology right now. You have Gonzaga, Syracuse, Kansas State, and LSU. And a lot of those, I think I would argue 3 of those teams, like FSU does need to be making a lot more noise. As I mentioned, they want to get into that, hosting position. You know, winning out the ACC tournament is the best way to do it. Cause Syracuse again is playing very well right now. Gonzaga, I guess, is the best one that you have a chance at knocking off at, LSU and, who's the other, Kansas State aren't moving. That's my opinion. They're playing to, well, Kansas State's playing Ball State right now, so Kansas State's going to be out in the first round anyway.
Sorry.
Sorry, Kansas State, but...
not even a real state.
But Kansas ain't real state. I don't know what you meant there, but... but yeah, we just kind of laid out what they need to do. It's pretty straightforward. Just win. Win, no matter what.
Yeah, and like one thing to note for, I think Jack did a good point of putting us on this preview, is Timpson and Sarah Bajetti will be honored before the game for surpassing a 1,000 mark career point. They both reached last Thursday against Wake Forest, so this is the first home game since that, obviously, so they get to celebrate that. Mikaela Timpson seeking her 6th straight consecutive double-double, which would tie for the longest streak in school history with former player Cherry Rivers. So,
I mean, even then, like, that shows just how good this team is too. That you have 3 players eclipsing 1,000 points in 1 year, and one of them is a sophomore this year. That's exciting in its own self.
Oh, definitely. So, and then lastly, we have to talk about this legally.
We have to talk about this.
No, I say this jokingly. Florida State men's basketball has been tough to watch at times this year, but they had an impressive win, and they played pretty well against Duke. You know, one player went off, and that kind of set the tone. But,
yeah.
Jack, what were your takeaways from Tuesday's game? What a week it's been, Thursday.
gosh. This team, they won. But it's like they did what they needed to do. They shot well from the field. I think that's the best thing this team could do right now is just – if they're shooting well from the field and just simplify things, I think that will help this team win a few more games, and I think that's good. Jameer Watkins went off again. He had 22 points. He had a double-double.
I mean, that's one player, if you want to talk about Florida State, who's exciting is Jameer Watkins. Everyone else is kind of like, you don't know what's going to happen. Chandler Jackson, obviously, someone that's been playing better of late.
Yeah.
It's been exciting to see him get something. But, yeah, no, I think it's hard to get – I say this, I'm not trying to be, like, you know, mean towards the team, but it's been hard to watch Florida State basketball this year.
It has, and it's, I mean, Chandler Jackson went off for 19, but it just feels like it's very random players that are going off most nights, and, like, the consistency is very weird. The only consistent, really, piece is Jameer, and I guess you can say Baba Miller fouling is pretty consistent. Jameer, I've said this before and I'll say it again. If you want to win, you can't have one player carrying the load every single. This is what happened last year. Matthew Cleveland,
yeah.
Yeah, Jameer's a great player. He's fun to watch, but it seems like every night he's carrying the load. It's always Jameer having to do everything. And granted, he got some support this last game with Chandler had 19, Jaden Worley had 13, and Cam Corin had 13 as well, and Baba Miller had 4 fouls, but sorry, continuing to pick on him, but I mean, it's just the consistency with the team. Yes, they shot for 54% from the field, which was good. They shot for 38% from 3-point, which is better than it has been in the past games. I think you have to play, they sat for 72% at the free throw line, which I think needs to be cleaned up a little bit more, considering you shouldn't be missing free throws, but that's still pretty high. Boston College, for a good part of this game, the problem was, like, you know, Leonard Hamilton talks about defense, and stuff like that. Boston College still shot for 51% from the field and shot for 40% from the arc. This is the, oh God, I had the stat line over and over again. I think this is the fourth straight game, or 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, this is the fourth straight game where their opponent has shot for over 40% from 3-point range. The last game, Duke, and as Essa mentioned, a player that went off for Duke,
Jared McCain.
I was about to sing the TikTok he's in, but I don't know if you knew it or not.
No, can you go ahead and sing it for us?
I'm 2 days into college and I'm 2 lessons behind. something like that. But he played a major role into the fact that Duke shot 62% from 3-point range. He had 8 of their 10. So, I mean, if one guy's going off, it's going to do that. But then you could continue to go down the line. When they played Virginia Tech shot 47% from 3-point range. And then you go to Virginia, and Virginia shot 55% from 3-point range. And yeah, I've been harping about this over and over again, and maybe it's my lack of – I feel like I know basketball pretty substantially, but I feel like the 3-point defense has been just a huge issue for Florida State this year. Yes, you won, but it's because you outshot the other team a lot more. The defense just – it's a continuous thing. The defense from 3 needs to improve, period. Who do they have left? Obviously, you have Clemson coming up, which is Clemson's a team that's still getting AP votes and is still, like, they're in the middle of the pack right now.
So, yeah, on that point, like, Clemson on Saturday, it's going to be a quad one game. Clemson's 26 according to that rankings. They have NC State, which is going to be at home, number 81, so a quad three game. Georgia Tech away, 146, a quad three game. Pittsburgh on the road, 56, a quad one game.
Oh.
And Miami at home, a quad three game. So, 2 quad one games, 3 quad. 3 games left, and this is not a tournament team unless they win the ACC tournament. They are
they an NIT team?
They're 14-12, 8-7. I think they're the bubble for NIT at best right now. 2-6 in quad one games, wins over Colorado and Wake Forest look great, fantastic, fine. 5-3 in quad 2 games, losses to South Florida, which looks a little better now. SMU at home and Virginia at home, so. You know, you could live with those, but they are – so they're 7-9 in quad 1 and 2 games. Am I math right?
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Yeah, 7-9, mm-hmm. Which you could live with, but the problem is you have gone 7-3 in quad 3 and 4 games, lost to the Georgia Tech at home, which is ranked 146, and lost to Louisville on the road, which you gave 101 points and ranked 211. You cannot do that. And then the one that really, really stings, it's going to – like the loss to Lipscomb – at home, 78-75 at home to end in 2023.
Which is a third place Ace Sun team, which is not – no, it's just not good either way.
It's a number 166 in net ranking. So right now, even if Florida State goes 5-0 in the season, which would be 2 more quad one wins, that puts them at, you know – 4-6, the losses are, like, even if you have four quad one wins, you're not a tournament team. Like, and I point to rival Florida, you know, like, let me pull up their thing. I think they have three quad one wins. Let's say they don't get another one the rest of the year. You're, you know, I'm saying Florida's not getting another one this year. I think they have two more opportunities left for that, if I'm not mistaken. But let's say Florida finishes with three and Florida State finishes with four. I think the difference is, I'm just going two teams head-to-head. Florida seems like a lock at this point for the tournament. You know, let's see, they're ranked number 29 net rankings. Florida State's number 94. Florida's 2-7 right now in quad one games, sorry. It looks like their win over Pittsburgh was a quad one for a short time. We'll move back to quad three. But Florida is 2-7 in quad one games, but they're 11-0, 16-0 in quad two, three, and four games.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a difference.
That dominance either way. I mean, I think another thing that pops out as well is that Pittsburgh and Clemson still have stuff to play for right now. Pittsburgh's an X four out team right now, and mm-hmm. Clemson is five speed in the Spokane regional. Like, these are two teams that are trying to continue to build upon their resume. And then, is this the right page? Yeah. Georgia Tech, I wouldn't count them out either. This is a team that's been sneaky this year. NC State's a very aggressive team as well. And then Miami, no matter what happens, like, that game's mad no matter what.
Yeah, yeah, no. And I think one thing to point out, one thing to remember, is I do think Florida State has to win out to be an NC to be a NIT team.
Yeah,
probably. I mean, not win out. Maybe, but you have probably, was it five games left?
I think you, the most you could lose is one, probably
one or two games at most, and it has to be like too selective where you lose. You can't lose to a random,
like a Clemson or a Pitt.
Yeah,
I think
exactly.
Those are the only two that are acceptable here.
And I think the important thing about, so Florida State probably has to win the ACC tournament to be a tournament team, which you know, to their credit, they're 8-7 in conference play. A lot of that came early on, the wins. I think they started 6-1. Is that correct? And 2-6 in their last.
They started 5-1 in ACC play.
5-1.
Yeah.
So they've gone 3-4, whatever. 3-6, whatever it is, the number is. Either way, not great recently. A hot start kind of catapulted them where they are. They are one game back of Wake Forest, tied with NC State, Pittsburgh, and Clemson. One game back of Wake Forest, fourth in the ACC once again, which is double bye. Which, if you want to win, if you're in a win, you probably have to get an automatic berth. You're not getting a at-large berth,
mm-hmm.
Florida State at this point. So you got to win out and win the ACC tournament, which is possible if you get a double bye. So Florida State has a chance of that. But it just seems like a long shot. We've seen this team, they're so inconsistent. I don't know. We'll see what happens. Obviously, if Clemson this weekend, that's where you start the road and get that win, a potential quad one win.
It's worth mentioning, too, because if you type up Florida State on ESPN and go to their page, this is a story on there. It's a guide to the 2024 Men's College Basketball Coaching Hot Seat, written by Jeff Borzello. And they put number three, there's a retirement watch on here, and Leonard Hamilton is on this retirement watch. It says, Leonard Hamilton, so it goes Jim Larinaga and then Leonard Hamilton have been asked about retirement for several years and both maintain they have no interest in retiring. Will their team's struggles this season change that decision? That's where that kind of cuts off there. Jim Larinaga is 74, Hamilton is 75. I'll just leave that there. I don't want to really delve into that right now. But yeah, like I said, I mean, you got to win out if you want to continue playing. It's been getting really hard to talk about this team. It's been disappointing just in talking about the 5-1 start. And as you mentioned with the tie for fourth place, in my opinion, I'm gonna be straightforward. FSU has the least chance of getting that fourth place bye because it's Clemson, Pittsburgh, NC State, Florida State right now. Florida State plays all of those teams for that bye.
Yeah.
And you got to show, I mean, it's just about wanting it more. And last time Florida State played at 9 p.m. too, I should add, it didn't. And on at home, it didn't go over well. Essen could talk.
No, I don't want to talk about how that went.
Please don't
bring that
up. But it was the Georgia game. It was not great. But Clemson's coming up 7:45, odd time, on Saturday, and then they're back at home on, I believe that's a Tuesday, the 27th, against NC State. Bring your coffee because it's tipping off at 9 p.m. So,
yeah. So a reminder, yeah. Florida State is 94 in net rankings right now. And it's what, 84 team? No, not
64.
64 team tournament. And as I, so 68 including the
four in. The few, yeah.
So, this is a team that, you know.
Comical at this point.
Yeah, this is a team, I'm sorry. Just like, it's a long shot to make the tournament. It's, we'll see what happens, but, you know, I think at the end of the day, that one, giving up 101 points to Louisville, I don't care if it's on the road, is just awful.
Yeah, all of it. There's a lot of marks there aren't great.
But thank you for joining us again, Jack. Where can they find us on social?
Yeah, you can find all of our stuff at knowlesports.com. Knowlesports just about everywhere on X/Twitter, on Facebook, TLH Knowlesports on Instagram. We have our YouTube channel, Knowlesports as well. Subscribe to that. We have all post-game videos there. And in the football season coming up, we have our breakdowns and stuff like that. If you were feeling nostalgic, you can go back and watch those. There's some fun videos back there. I am Jack G. Williams on X, SNS. SN_Kasem on X as well. Yeah, subscribe, follow us here where podcasts are posted to be updated. And yeah, subscribe to the Tallahassee Democrat. As always, that is our home paper. But yeah, thank you guys for joining us for another episode of the Knoll Sports Podcast.
Thanks, guys.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.